closer.
It's not playing with Lex and Dan.
Welcome back to Not Playing with Lex and Dan. I am your co-host, Dan.
I am your co-host, Lex.
And we are the only two co-hosts you will ever have.
Suckers.
You did tune into this, so you should know what you're getting into. So for those of you who are not familiar with our wonderful show, and
not familiar with Lex and Dan.
Which is where we talk about things that you've never heard about. How about those Gila monsters? I don't know. I had nothing. So we watch movies that one or both of us have not seen. And we've been taking turns showing each other movies that the other one has not seen. Today, it's my turn to see a movie that I have never seen.
And we're keeping the Alec Baldwin streak alive. He's been in at least two films so far this season, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He was in The Hunt for Red October, yep. And he was in Beetlejuice.
Yep.
And today, now you're going to see a third Alec Baldwin movie. The second Alec Baldwin movie this season that you have not seen.
Wow, that was complicated, but yes, I'll tend to agree with that. I feel like maybe we're oversaturated on Alec Baldwin and need to mix it up with some, you know, Stephen Baldwin.
Right.
Some Billy Baldwin.
Yes, we can do that. I mean, you'll choose next week's movie, but this
week's... Oh, yeah, I'm definitely choosing Fled next week, because if you want a good movie.
Well, this week's is Glengarry Glen Ross, a 1992 film. What do you know about it?
Well, you've assured me it's not about scotch. So I'm a little disappointed. I believe, first of all, I know it's a David Mamet film.
I know that too.
Was it originally a play?
It was.
Okay. So I know that it was adapted. He is a theater writer and a film writer. I think he actually either lived or lives in my hometown, which is odd. I know that it's about, so they're all like salesmen, right? Rent real estate agent? I don't know.
They're all podcast ad salespeople.
They're all podcast ad salespeople. This is the Lex Friedman story. Lex Gary, Lex Ross.
But you're on the right track.
And
go ahead.
Okay, I know that first place is a new car. Second place says steak knives, and third place is you're fired or something.
Hey,
like that.
Good for you.
I know a lot of weird, like random stuff.
That was good. Do you know whose line that is?
I don't know, but I do know that I think some of this, you know, I just saw the poster on Netflix, but Kevin Spacey's in here too, right?
Yeah.
Which makes it the second Kevin Spacey movie we've seen this year, I think. Right? Because L.A. Confidential.
L.A. Confidential, of course, yes.
Ed Harris?
So you're seeing this now from the Netflix.
No, I'm not. I'm staring into space, like just sort of recalling things that I remember about this. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, Ed Harris is in it.
Okay.
Do you know who the stars are? There's two or three.
None of those people are the stars?
They're all big in it, but there's like three people who I would say, well, two at least, whom you've missed.
Okay. It might come to me as soon as I like look back at that, but I at the moment I'm blanking on it.
And do you know anything unusual about Alec Baldwin's role? Okay, this is not a spoiler, but his role did not exist in the play. It was added for the movie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I also know what is it? Oh, it's always be something. And now I've suddenly blanked on the last word there.
Always
Sorry,
be
it's,
something. That's right.
Always be something.
Always be something.
I'm a little slow today. ABS. Always be something.
Well, you'll get there.
It's ABC, right?
Like, it is.
But I can't remember what. All of a sudden, I just can't. I can't come up with that word. Always
you
be.
You can't close it, huh? You can't figure out what it is.
Ah, I hate you. Always be clobbering.
Always be clobbering. Actually, there's a great. Once you see that this big scene with the ABC and the first prize is a new car. Once you see all that, you'll have to watch this SNL skit where the character involved is heading up Santa's workshop and he's coaching the elves with almost the same speech. Just it's always be cobbling instead. It's pretty great. It is pretty great. We'll have to put a link in the show notes or something because it's that funny.
All right. I don't know who is Gary and who is Ross, but I'm assuming one of the people that we mentioned. Otherwise, this is just a nightmare. A nightmare waiting to happen.
It is possible to watch this movie and still not understand what the title is.
Okay, great.
And I should also say, I watched this movie as recently as like 2 weeks ago, so I am primed and fresh and ready. But I liked it so much that when it occurred to me last week to keep the Alec Baldwin trend alive, I feel like you're going to like it. I don't know. I like writing.
I like Mammoth. Exactly. We'll talk about that later.
So let's watch it. We're paused. We're watching on Netflix today. I mean, you should go click on one of our Amazon affiliate links to watch it, and I use Netflix. But we're on Netflix, and we paused right after. What was the production logo that faded out?
I think it was New Line.
That's what I thought too. And so for us, it faded out at with 140.09 remaining. And are you ready to watch?
I'm ready. Let's count it in.
You do it.
All right. We'll press play in 3, 2, 1.
Now, Dan, I have some good news for you.
Hey, his name is Blake.
Yeah. The good news is, my friend.
Tell me that news.
You have now seen Glengarry Glen Ross.
I have. It was pretty good. I liked it. I got to ask, did Jack Lemmon win an Oscar for this role?
I don't believe that he did. I believe that Al Pacino got some awards.
Yeah, I would buy that. I think they all did well.
Great about it. It's just everything about it is so well done. Like, there's no lovable characters, obviously, or anything.
Yeah. But it's an actor's movie, yeah. Right? Like, there's nothing to take away from, because every scene is about interactions between these characters. There's no set dressing. There's no, there's no plot that doesn't directly involve these guys talking to each other. So it's really just, there are roles for them all to sink their teeth into, I think. And that's what, I mean, and you can tell the theater background of it, right?
Yeah.
It seems pretty obvious.
Exactly. It very much feels like a play. Jack Lemmon was voted Best Actor by the National Board of Review. Pacino was nominated for the Academy Award for Supporting Actor for Best Actor in a Supporting Role, but he lost to Gene Hackman for Unforgiven. However, the same year, Pacino won Best Actor for A Scent of a Woman. So he was doing fine. He didn't mind.
Gotcha.
He was nominated in both categories. How familiar are you with The Simpsons?
A little bit. I've seen an episode.
There's a salesman on that occasionally who shows up on The Simpsons named Gil Gunderson. Mm-hmm. And it is, you can't see it and not realize instantly it is based on Jack Lemmon in this movie. It's the same voice and mannerisms and inability to sell.
I really like Jack Lemmon in this movie. I do think is this his last great role?
That's possibly true. I'm not sure.
I'm trying to think, because I was trying to think what he did after this. I think he did like Grumpy Old Men and stuff after this, but this might be his last really, really great role.
I mean, so it's funny because you think about all the different actors in the movie, and it's a lot of really good actors, and you're like, well, who does the best job? But they all do so well.
Yeah, I know. They do. They do. Actually, he was in a bunch of stuff after this, huh?
Yeah. Glengarry Ross was 92, and so he did Grumpy Old Men in 93 and Grumpier in 95.
Yeah, he did like Shortcuts, and he did My Fellow Mary. He did Hamlet.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a 12 Angry Men remake.
God. And this is very much not the kind of role for which Jack Lemmon is known, in the sense of like what his style
sure,
is.
Sure, yeah, right. I mean, like, I think of, Some Like It Hot and The Apartment and stuff like that,
right?
Where he's kind of the lovable or the odd couple, right?
Yep.
Where he's like, got a certain amount of, what was the word I was just about to use? It's not a schmuck, that's not what I mean, but like he's kind of a bumbling comic figure.
Right, right. Here and he's really like, super sad sack.
He puts it on though, right? Yep. Like, you can, it's the, when those moments, when those come through and you're watching him like trying to sell and he's wheedling and he's like working that sort of like, oh, I'm just a kindly old man, yeah. Right? Like that's what makes this a brilliant role, is that he jumps back and forth from that kind of seamlessly.
Right. He's clearly like, he has the talent to be a good salesman. It seems to me, like when he Shel Levine in from, and like when he does all that stuff.
Well, but he's got the, I mean, like, it's clearly he's over the hill, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was a great salesman,
yeah,
and he's trying to recapture that, but it's not as easy. He's he's burned out. He's clearly got stuff going on with his family, right? Like,
yeah,
all
sick
this stuff
daughter
going
or something.
On. Yeah, yeah, and that's interesting too. Is that how little we go into these guys' stories, and yet how well we feel like we know them. Just from what we see of them here. And it's fascinating to me to watch a movie where it's like the only context in which we see these guys is working, right?
Yeah.
In a sense, they take Alec Baldwin's lesson to heart. They're closing constantly,
right?
They are selling constantly. We don't see their home lives. We don't see them interact with their families. We hear that many of them have families,
right?
But we don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
Jack Lemmon's probably the one that we know the most about.
Right. And all we really know is that he's got like a dying or very unwell daughter in a hospital somewhere, it seems.
Right. Right. And they all try to, I think the fascinating thing to watch is they're all trying to sell each other, right?
Yes. And all of their interactions are based on attempting to close each other, right?
Right. There's a power dynamic and it's like they're constantly trying to get the other, to get the leverage and the upper hand on the other person. Like Ed Harris trying to convince Alan Arkin to break in the office with him.
So cruel.
Like basically running the gamut of like, I'm going to entice you. I'm going to coax you. Right. I'm going to threaten you. Like, yeah. I'm going to basically use every trick in my book to try and
Arkin doesn't
you.
Do it.
Right, right. And that's the kind of the shocker there is like, and it's interesting. I didn't see that coming.
Yep.
You know, and it's not that it's hardly unbelievable, especially when we see, you know, earlier in the movie when Jack Lemmon's dealing with Kevin Spacey and we see his desperation.
Right.
Right. You know, there's clearly he's clearly got the motive to do it.
Yeah. What I like on, and again, like I said, I've watched this movie just a couple weeks ago, but every time I watch it, there's new lines where, oh, this is my favorite moment. No, this is my favorite moment. But there's just so many good interactions. Like, obviously, Alec Baldwin has that pretty compelling scene of his own, and that's his only thing in the movie, right? He doesn't show up ever again.
Right.
So, you know, he's got an 8-minute monologue and then he's done. But that scene is probably the most quoted part because it's so well done by him. But then, and like I said, while we were watching, I'm not convinced he's acting in that scene. But, you know, there's so many different good moments as the different characters interact. Like Pacino's entire sale to, what's that actor's name?
Jonathan
His
Price.
Whole sale to Jonathan Price.
Yeah, so
crazy.
I know, that's curious. I'm fascinated by that because there are, I feel that there is subtext to that, right? That is, how is he getting him to sell this? Like, to my mind, the thing that I take away from that, which is never stated and there's nothing like in the literal text of the movie, but like I thought he slept with him basically.
Interesting.
Well, the dynamic between them, like he's selling him and I felt like to me what I was taking away from this was that this guy was like a closeted gay man and Pacino had figured that out and was using that as his angle to sell him. Like, and that's totally just like an interpretation,
right?
Like based on like the body language and the way they interact, and it could be totally off base, but like especially that last scene, watching Jonathan Price in that last scene, he's so good in that scene because the way that his body language and everything, he keeps like putting his hand over his mouth or keeps like pressing his hand against his chest, you know, the way that he's moving and talking and he won't make eye contact and he kind of mutters a lot, like he barely gets a word in edgewise, right? You know, and he is clearly, you know, deeply conflicted about something. And it may just be that this deal, you know, he made this deal without his wife's permission and that causes him angst. But it feels like it goes deeper than that to me. And it's just like, you know, because he feels like he's done something, he's committed a betrayal.
And so you are not the only person to make that conclusion. I thought the first time I saw it, I thought that it was weird because it seems like Link keeps trying to move himself physically closer into Pacino's personal space. And then like nothing ever happened with it. So I was like, oh, I must be wrong. But then after watching it multiple times, there's the theory that you'll read about on IMDb at some point is that potentially that Roma is sensing that Link is closeted and is using that to try to just not necessarily to have slept with him, but just to say,
like,
you know, I'm okay, you're okay.
Him.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's definitive either way.
I don't think it has to be. Yeah. I don't think that's important. I mean, like there's space for interpretation there. You know, and I think there's room to sort of discuss, you know, a lot of stuff happens off screen in this movie, right?
Yep.
You know, everything from, you know, Jack Lemmon's final sale there.
Right, toward Jack Lemmon, you know, getting involved in the robbery.
Right. Like all this, in some ways, so much of the meat happens off the scene and we're seeing the moments between the plot points, if you will. You know, and I think that's kind of a fascinating approach to it. We see Pacino selling a client and we see Jack Lemmon's one failed attempt to sell a client. But those are almost aberrations to the rest of the movie where we hear about things that they've done or see them, you know, going off to do something without actually seeing what happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's, it's a really interesting approach. Again, it's a very theatrical approach. And yeah, I don't know. I did come out of this feeling very much like I've been, you know, we've all, someone's tried to sell all of us at one point or another. Right. And, you know, you kind of suspect this is what it's like well, behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there are parts of it where, you know, I'm a salesperson. I'm also a sales manager, right? I have salespeople who work for me. And I think about how do I motivate them? Very much not in the Alec Baldwin style. But, you know, you think about it, there are parts of it where it's like, well, yes, you should always be closing. That's good. That's right. Then everybody makes more money. So always be closing. I like
that. Do you not let any of your employees drink coffee?
They can only have chai tea lattes. That's my policy.
Unlike, I mean, when they're closing. Clearly.
True. Yeah. Chai is for closers.
It's the hipster version.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, these are, you know, David Mamet and Aaron Sorkin are not similar writers in many contexts, but they both are very.
But they have, you know, I was thinking about them. Well, I was thinking there's about, a similar I kept thinking vibe. About A Few Good Men, right. Which I actually haven't seen, but I kept thinking about it.
It's they're dialogue rich. They aren't giving you any shortcuts to understand what's happening with the plotting. Like, you have to pay a lot of attention. They have multiple conversations going at once, or people who are, if there's that scene where Ed Harris and Alan Arkin are both basically monologuing at the same time as if it's a conversation.
Right. And they're in the diner, right? Like, yeah.
And so, you know, they both do a lot of that. But when you look at most of Aaron Sorkin's things, there are the good guys and the bad guys. But here, there aren't really any good guys, because even like the best behaving characters are selling what they know is worthless by using deceptive, evil tactics.
And arguably the most, I don't know, I'm not even sure I can call him the most moral character, but like Kevin Spacey actually, to a certain extent, has like a morality going. He's on the right side of things in some ways, but he's also just, he's a jerk.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not going to accept that from you, because let me make the case against him being at all the moral center of the film.
I'm not saying he's the moral center.
But he knowingly gives Jack Lemmon that shitty lead over and over again, because Lemmon says he's seen it a lot. He reneges on his initial deal to take just 20% and says, I also need $50 a lead.
Yeah.
He's willing to do all those things. And he says, if you tell me where the leads are, I won't tell the police he did this, and then immediately goes to tell the police.
That's a fair point.
So I'm just saying, Kevin Spacey is horrible. I mean, he's really good, but his character is horrible in this film.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Nobody has moral high ground in this
with
film.
With the possible
except
exception
maybe
of
Alan Arkin.
Well, yeah, Alan Arkin,
he doesn't
yes.
do it, right? Like, he doesn't, he gets the opportunity to be,
that's true.
You know, to help steal the leads, and then opts clearly not to.
I would say also maybe Jonathan Pryce. He's not terrible in the movie.
He's not, like, his morality is irrelevant
right.
to the movie, though.
Yes. He's really good.
Yeah, he is really good. There's not a bad role in this movie. I mean, granted, it's also a movie that's not heavy on the diversity.
Right.
But, you know, of these actors, you can't pick out someone who is not performing at the top of their game in this movie. And it's a fascinating assembly of actors and characters, because there's just so many different, like, despite being, you know, a bunch of white guys, like, it's also, you know, there's very different personalities. There's people at very different stages in their lives.
Yep.
You got, like, you know, Alan Arkin and Jack Lemmon on one side, and Pacino and Ed Harris on the other side, and Kevin Spacey kind of caught in the middle.
Right.
And yeah, it's a fascinating group.
I mean, and Ed Harris is just, he's got so much anger from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because that kind of peters out at the end, where it's weird because he seems to kind of get out of it.
Yep.
Right? He gets questioned by the cops, and then he gets pissed off at Jack Lemmon and leaves.
Right.
And Al Pacino and leaves. And, you know,
but then he,
Lemmon like throws him under the bus basically, but like he clearly got out of that interview without
right.
arousing their
and
suspicions.
You almost have to wonder if part of his anger at Lemmon is to try to distance himself, either both of them mm-hmm. intentionally or not. Like, well, no, we have no connections to each other. We would never commit this crime together.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he thinks that far ahead.
Right.
If he's just an opportunist.
Yeah. The actors in the film apparently like to refer to it as Death of a Fucking Salesman.
I believe that.
Saying that it was akin to Death of a Salesman, but with more profanity. So I do like that analysis of it. But so you liked
Death
it.
Death of a Salesman
good.
Part 2.
It's been hard for me to sometimes find movies that you like, and I just felt so good about this one because it's...
No, it is a very good movie. I really like Mamet. I'm trying to think. I was thinking about other things that I have seen by him and other movies that I really liked by him. And there are several. Let's see. I'm trying to remember which ones... You seen Heist? Ever seen Heist?
I don't believe I have. I don't think I've seen many other Mamet films, to be honest.
Hey, we watched we watched one that he wrote.
Wag the Dog, I've seen and enjoyed.
I like Wag the Dog. In fact, we have previously watched a David Mamet film.
The Untouchables,
film.
Right?
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yes.
He wrote a lot of movies. I was looking to see I've seen The Untouchables, Glengarry Glen Ross. The Spanish Prisoner, you ever seen
no.
that?
No.
That's pretty good. I've seen Wag the Dog. Ronin, I guess he wrote under a pseudonym, which is actually a pretty good movie too. Jonathan Pryce is in that movie.
Interesting.
The Winslow Boy, I saw that one. State in Maine is pretty good, if you've never seen that.
Is that a comedy?
It is a comedy.
I think
Philip
I have,
Seymour
yes,
Hoffman's
I think I have
it.
Seen that one. That's when I was thinking about it. That was the other David Mamet film I was going to say I probably see.
That one's pretty
hey,
good.
Alec Baldwin's
I like that
in
one
it.
A lot.
I don't remember anything about yes. it, but I did see it.
I think it has to do with them filming. They're filming a
yeah,
movie,
yeah.
like in a like.
Is that the
town.
One that was like rife with production problems and issues and stuff? Because there were two movies that
I
came out around
maybe.
The same time. I think might have been it.
Heist, I've seen. Spartan is also pretty good. I know a lot of people liked Red Belt. I didn't see it. Yeah, so I've seen a bunch of his movies.
So this was a lower risk pick than I thought, maybe.
Well, I think he's a really good writer.
That's good.
I don't, you know, he's not ever. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but for me, I enjoy. I think he has a way with words, and I will certainly watch anything that he's written.
Sure.
I don't know if I'll like all his movies, but I will definitely.
Right,
watch
he gets them. The benefit of the doubt of at least getting the trial run. I like that.
Sure,
I approve.
Absolutely.
Well, so you liked it. I'm really glad. I'm happy. I'm excited, and it's a movie that I can watch anytime it's on. And if I can't figure out something to do, it's on Netflix. So I watch it multiple times a year. This is my second time this year. So
excellent.
I'm a fan,
excellent.
And I'm glad you're a fan too. What are we going to watch next week? Do you know?
Well, I thought really hard and long about this, and I think we're going to watch. One of my all-time favorite movies, which I've been saving to show to you, and I think this is my last pick of the season, so I'm gonna use
it. Is it from Star Wars?
It's not Star Wars. It is a movie called Sneakers.
Okay.
Do you know anything about Sneakers?
I think if I do, I'm confusing with something else. Like, is it about hackers?
It
okay,
is.
Okay, so that's not the movie Hackers. Okay, good.
It's not about shoes.
Right. Okay, so is Angelina Jolie in it? That's the only thing.
No, that's Hackers.
Okay, so I know nothing about Sneakers. Just nothing.
Okay, good. All right. Well, we'll watch that next week. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you'll enjoy it.
I look forward to it.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you for showing me Glengarry Glen Ross.
My pleasure. Thank you for watching it with me, and I'll see you next week to watch Sneakers.
Well, let's close the show. Always close the show.
Always be closing.
Don't eat your hat.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Hats are for closers.
The problem is, he's got to eat his hat because he can't afford any other food.